Our founding fathers said that all people are created equal and have been endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights, including the right to life. But 50 years of abortion rights in America have undermined that right. Why should we be opposed to abortion? Many young Americans see abortion rights as reproductive justice. Well, one of the effective voices of the pro-life movement today is Chelsea Human, who works with the Human Coalition Action Group, which is the public policy arm of Human Coalition. And we'll put their website on the post here. But we welcome Chelsea Human to discuss myths about abortion. And I appreciate that. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Chelsea, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
You know, it's interesting. In the pro-life movement, and I've been pro-life, I can tell you the date, but I know it was in the spring of 1980. I went in, I heard Father John Powell, who used to teach at Loyola University in Chicago, and I heard him in just a small church in a lecture on a Sunday afternoon, and I came out totally pro-life, and I've been pro-life ever since. And it was just so compelling. But here we are, for all these years, we've thought, oh, all we got to do is get over the finish line. The finish line is to overturn Roe v. Wade. And how false that was of a premise that, okay, once Roe v. Wade is overturned, then all the abortion issues go out the window. And we have to deal basically with the myths about abortion all over again and, you know, re-educate a whole new crop of Americans. So I'm going to sit down and let you wax eloquent about myths about abortion.
Yeah, there are so many, but you're absolutely right, Jerry, that the minute Roe was overturned, all that really meant is our work as a movement begins. We just now are able to start protecting life in the womb and serving their mothers. And the truth is, we know at Human Coalition, where we have nurses on the front line, social workers on the front line, serving pregnant women in need across the country, day in and day out, we know that those women are still facing the exact same circumstances leading them towards abortion as they were before Roe. And so while maybe in some states life is protected, and that's incredible, and lawmakers have done such faithful work in that, we still have a long ways to go until abortion nationwide is truly what we say, unthinkable and unnecessary for women.
Okay, well, here's an example. Any law restricting access to abortion means that a 12-year-old girl who gets pregnant after being raped by her stepfather has to carry that baby to term. This is something that was said, for example, recently in Ohio, and people said, oh, we can't vote, you know, for the pro-life amendment. We have to go with a pro-choice amendment. What is your response to that? Rape and incest, where do they fit into this whole issue of right to life?
Yes. I mean, what you're alluding to is, I think, the compassionate humanity side of all of us. Every single one of us wants to see women and girls protected and safe and cared for. And how we go about that matters. And so in the instance of rape or incest, that's one of the most horrific crimes of abuse in humanity you can imagine. And so I think we start with compassion for her. But then there's the other side of it, which is understanding that taking an innocent life is not the answer to rape. That doesn't bring healing. Often it compounds additional trauma on the young woman or the young girl who has been raped. So killing her unborn child is often cited by these victims as an additional trauma they didn't realize they were going to have to go through. What we want to see is she needs care, she needs counseling, she needs her perpetrators to be imprisoned. What we have found on the other side is that abortionists will kill her child and send her back into the home where the abuse occurred, back home with her abusers. We even had an instance out of Indiana that is being investigated now, where Planned Parenthood sent a minor back home with her mother's boyfriend, who was abusing her and had caused her pregnancy. And so what I think I would like the country to know is that the abortion industry often uses abortion as a way to continue allowing this abuse to occur. It's a cycle of abuse that happens. The same is true, of course, of human trafficking victims. Traffickers bring women into abortion clinics. They have their spots on weekends. They know they can go where the abortionists perform the abortions and allow the women to go back to work home with their pimps and with their traffickers. So it's horrific what's actually occurring on the ground when you pull back that veil and see what truly is happening.
Okay, and let me reword the basic issue about rape and incest in a different way, and it's along these lines. Abortion for all is justified because of rape and incest. Suppose there were a law, you know, I know, for example, pro-life former Congressman Alan West, he keeps talking about the Reagan exceptions. He says, okay, I'm totally opposed to abortion except in the instances of rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Now, if you had abortion illegal for all terms except for those three things, rape, life, and the health of the mother, the physical health of the mother, of course, you know, how much would that undo abortion? How many abortions actually happen because of rape and incest? And by the way, the life of the mother, that's often a canard. But anyway, yes, just comment on that.
I mean, yes, we're talking about between 1 and 5%, depending on which one of those statistics you're looking at. So a very, very small number is really used as an extremity. Again, to push back on people who are compassionate. We all love women. We want to see women cared for. We all want to prevent abuse. And the actual way to do that is reaching her before her abortion. And so when you look at pregnancy resource centers, there's 2,500 across the country. When they're intercepting women, they're often able to actually do holistic preventative care here. In our clinics at Human Coalition, we assist women and get them referred over to counselors, women who are facing domestic abuse. We get them into safe maternity homes. Any challenge she's facing, homelessness, we can help find her not just housing, but jobs. We build her resume. We do interview training. Those are actual life-changing resources provided for these women in these circumstances. Whereas if she were to go to an abortion clinic, reproductive health care just means ending her reproduction. That's all they're there for. They're not actually changing those circumstances that brought her in to begin with. It's neglect on that side, whereas on our side, it's truly holistic care. And so when you're thinking about this compassionate side, we all want to see women thriving and flourishing with their living children. We know that it is never okay to take an innocent life, and circumstances can't justify that. And I think that's where this movement has a long way to go on changing hearts and minds, and the cultural side of this is, you know, really saying, under what circumstances do you think it's okay to end a human life? And the answer really should be none. And I want people to understand that there's a whole system and infrastructure in place for this moment, for these women.
Well, that's interesting you say that. And this leads me to another myth. Here's a myth spoken out, explicitly, for example, by Senator Elizabeth Warren, where she says that these pro-life, you know, crisis pregnancy centers, they're doing real harm to women. Are they? You just described a beautiful scenario. Who's right, you or her?
Well, obviously, we think we're right. I mean, when we serve nearly 50,000 women a year, that is a high volume of women in the pregnancy resource center movement. And I think that the women's voices are best on their own, right? Their women speak for themselves. And we do exit surveys for all of the women we serve. And 98% of the women out of those 50,000 that we served, they said that they felt cared for. They felt loved by our nurses and staff. And that's even among women, by the way, who go on to choose to have an abortion. And many do. 95% would refer to a friend. And so when we look at how we're caring for women, we're going to provide them the utmost professional care. It's licensed social workers, licensed nurses that we have on staff. We're connecting them with other licensed gynecologists, professionals, counselors, really whatever she needs is on her terms. And that's because we care about the whole woman. We care about her and her child. We know that what thriving looks like for her means her whole family. We never want to separate the child from the mother. You can care for both and care for them both well. And so, of course, that is absolutely a myth. But what we are seeing is this disconcerting trend. We're seeing a trend where Democrat state attorney general's offices are opening up investigations on pregnancy resource centers. We have Congress sending letters to pregnancy resource centers. It's really disconcerting what we're seeing. You're seeing Google take all of us off of their website, or Yelp, removing resource centers. And all that this does, by the way, is remove options for women. You know, they say they're for women's choice. And does that choice include if women choose to seek other help and alternative assistance? If those women need maternity homes, if they need jobs, if they need to finish their education, why wouldn't we want to connect them with those resources? So that I would put the question back on them. You know, how can you remove free charitable care from pregnant women when they need it most? It's absurd.
And we should add the money factor here. I mean, okay, these politicians that are really strongly pro-abortion, they're getting a lot of money from Planned Parenthood. Meanwhile, these crisis pregnancy centers and ministries that you've been highlighting that you're all involved in, they do this through, you know, private donation. So, you know, follow the money here. Okay, here's another myth. It's not a baby, it's just a blob of tissue.
That one makes me laugh because, you know, a lot of the people who say that pretend that they're in the scientific right. But the science really points us to a few things. One, 95% of all biologists agree that life begins at conception. And that's because the seven factors of life are all present at conception. Cells that can multiply, cells that metabolize. There's a whole list of factors biologists just objectively agree on when life begins. And all of that starts at conception. And so we know that it's a human and it's a child. Women aren't having puppies. Let's be real here. The difference is by dehumanizing that child, it makes it easier to justify killing that child. But if we start at the beginning and we say it is truly a human, science now tells us that it's alive, whether that's at conception, at a heartbeat, at brain waves, when that baby has fingerprints by 12 weeks, can feel pain by 15, you know, really from there, it's on us as a society to say innocent life should never be ended. And that is why abortion is such a crime against humanity. And it's a violent crime against humanity.
Abortion is healthcare for women. Your thoughts on that myth?
That one's really simple. Healthcare saves lives and heals disease. It does not take away innocent life. So that's the first. The second would be that abortion, obviously, there are two humans involved. There's the woman and the growing child within her. That's, you know, 10 toes, 10 fingers are involved, but that baby has its own fingers and its own toes and its own body and its own autonomy and is growing. And so to end that life is not really healthcare for women. It's death to a child. Healthcare for women looks like gynecological care, prenatal care, preventative care, if she was inclined to do that before she got pregnant. Those are all healthcare options, mammograms. But that's not really what abortion providers are providing. They're not providing reproductive healthcare. As I mentioned, they're ending reproduction or they're providing birth control. Pretty limited services when you look at what they're actually providing.
Okay. We have about a minute and a half left, just so you know. Okay, here's one, and this one's kind of stupid, but I just want to say it because I've actually heard this articulated. God gives us choice as human beings to obey him or disobey him. So God is supposedly, quote unquote, pro-choice.
This one, I'm worried about people getting struck by lightning over if you really think about it. Because if you're a believer, you believe in the Bible, and what the Bible tells us why human life matters is that God created it. God creates each one of those babies in his image, in the image of God. So to destroy the image of God is very serious. And not only that, he creates every single image, he tells us, every single human with a purpose, a divine purpose. He has counted the number of hairs on our head. He holds our tears. He loves us deeply enough to send his son to die for us. And if he was willing to sacrifice his son for us, he does not ask us to sacrifice our children for ourselves.
Okay. I've got enough time for your action, your website, which is HucoAction.org, HucoAction.org. And we have enough time for a 10-second closing thought from you about abortions and common myths.
Yes, I think we have a long ways to go. People have various opinions, beliefs, experiences with this, but I think it's good to be prayerful and to remember humans have dignity. They matter. Their lives matter. And we as a society all have a duty to make sure that we flourish as humans.
Chelsea Human, thanks so much. All the best.
Thanks for having me.